Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program today. The latest on health and healing, how to live a longer life. If you've had a stroke or know someone who has, I'll show you how they could survive. Also, confirmed, more mammograms you get, the more harm they do. Lower your breast cancer risk with, I'll tell you that in a moment. So we have a lot to share, including the five top superfoods you can consume with the most healing power. Then from our other areas, we're going to talk about public health issues. This is a new segment to our program. It impacts everyone in the audience. The FDA approves the sale of a new type of prescription drug. It's supposed to represent about $25 billion in new sales. It'll go on sale in the near future. What is it? You won't believe it. Well, this audience would believe it. From Professor Bruce Levine, why the newest psychiatric diagnostic Bible will be a boon for Big Pharma and deadly for everyone else. And we have a quote from the top person who was the former chair of the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 4 task force. He's currently a professor emeritus at Duke University. He had some very choice words, and they were not complimentary about this new Bible of psychiatry, which your physician or psychiatrist will use to diagnose completely normal behavior. And what if you disagree? What if you say, doctor, I'm just going through some grief right now. I've lost a loved one. You won't believe what they can do to you if you refuse to accept their diagnosis and treatment. I'll share that with you under our public health area. And finally, if time permits, being American is bad for your health, according to this new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And I'll explain why. Then, from Commentary and Issues, from our issue, from Alex Kane from Alternet, miss a simple traffic ticket? Go to jail. The return of debtors' prisons in the United States. Hard times, USA. I've been filming on this topic around the country. And also from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, it has happened here in America. The police state is real. This is a part of our continuing series on fascism in the United States. And commencing Wednesday, I will be playing video streaming tapes you can watch, by the way, as well as listen to, on proving my point. Also, I'm almost completed with the research, the scholarly background, on who controls the world. And it's no one that you've heard of. But I'll go into details. It's a very complex web. And I'll show you what they do. And I'll have guests who are experts in each area. Because you can't look at it as just one. You have to look at it as a puzzle. And each piece of the puzzle represents an important fit. But that a report, which is rather substantial, I hope to get on within the next 2 weeks. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. A stroke is a terrible thing. One of my close friends had a stroke 3 years ago and is just now able to get full motion back into the body. For the average person, they frequently don't ever get it back and then end up having another stroke on top of it and then have to take anti-stroke medication, which is really blood clotting medication to keep blood thin. So anything that we can do to help a person prevent a stroke or those who've had a stroke to recover, we should focus on, especially when it's natural, non-toxic. Well, there's a study out from the American Stroke Association's International Stroke Conference. And what they did is they compared the survivors receiving their usual standard care or participating in a national fitness program And what they found was that Tai Chi, which is a martial art dating way back into ancient China, it includes very soft rhythmic movements, very graceful movements. I'm sure most of the people here have seen it being practiced, where the arms move in rotation. Well, it increases mental concentration. It relaxes your breathing. It improves your physical movements. Quote, this is from the head of the study done at the University of Arizona College of Nursing. Learning how to find and maintain your balance after a stroke is challenging. Tai Chi is effective in improving both static and dynamic balance, which is important to prevent falls. Tai Chi is readily available in most U.S. cities and is relatively inexpensive. So something that inexpensive is good. And if you want to know, well, how bad is a fall? Stroke survivors experience 700% more falls each year than healthy adults. And those falls, since they don't have strong muscle strength to break the fall or to grab something, they generally end up causing fractures. And that can cause infections. So, Tai Chi. Now, we have a lot of stressed out young people in the United States. The American Psychological Association survey, Stress in America, Missing the Healthcare Connection, found young adults, called the millennials, are the most stressed out generation in the United States. Now, these are people 18 to 33 years of age, and they have an average stress level of 5.4 on a 10-point scale, compared to a national average, which is much lower. In fact, the survey found that a significant proportion of Americans feel there is a gap between what they want from their healthcare system and what it actually delivers. They also found that that some of this generation, the younger people, say they rate their stress levels at an 8, 9, or 10 on a scale of 10. And so what does it mean to be stressed? Well, here are some things you may not appreciate. 59% of Americans with chronic illness are unable to deal with stress. And we know that stress leads to chronic illness. Therefore, you can undermine your immune system, be more susceptible to colds and flu and infections. It directly impacts your cardiovascular system, making you far more susceptible to cardiovascular disease and strokes. It will disrupt your neuron endocrine system. It adversely affects your central nervous system. All this takes an enormous emotional toll. So simply because a person can't afford college, or doesn't know if they'll be able to stay in college, or don't know if they can get a job when they get out of college, or they're out of college and they can't get a job or can't get the right job or can't get right employment or full employment. They're staying with their parents, and now the banks are on their case. All those can cause stress in a younger person. All of them, from work and illness and family problems and caring for someone who is not well, especially if they have long-term illness, bereavement, your surroundings, overcrowding, noise, pollution, crime, lack of quality time, all of these create stress. So if anything, we should have a program today addressing young people's needs at the stress level. We should have holistic mental health counseling centers in every community in the United States. First, that would be a good way to help sociologists, psychologists, psychotherapists, life coaches and counselors to work with people who otherwise may not have anyone they can go to because our current system doesn't offer them anything. So that would save a lot of lives. It would also give gainful employment, and it would help people better cope during stressful times. I counsel a lot of vets. In fact, on my tours around the United States when I'm filming, as I am now, I run into vets who've watched any one of the four different documentaries I've done on the vet's plight, the latest being American Veterans, Forgotten and Betrayed. and they tell us how many had traumatic brain injury while in combat or going back for the third, fourth, or fifth tour of duty, and nobody would pay attention. And then when they went to get help, it would frequently take them 15 months even to be seen in a system. So on the one hand, we have to ask ourselves just a basic common sense question, and then one that deals more with ethics. Is it right to encourage people to enlist who may be enlisting because there's no other job opportunity? Put them in harm's way. Then they go through post-traumatic stress disorder. They're put on psychiatric meds and encouraged to take these in the armed forces, which then leads to the highest level of suicide in American military history. In fact, last year, more American veterans committed suicide than American vets who were killed in action. That's the first time that's happened, ever. So the government and its agencies working in a duplicitous and a secretive way with the pharmaceutical industry and its lobbyists are encouraging vets who are in theaters of operation to get on psychiatric meds, which can frequently cause violence and suicide. So that's wrong. The second aspect is, if we can't take care of them, if they end up with an injury, either physical or emotional, then we're not being honest about it. And I have sent a copy of all of these films, all of them, to Keith Oberman, Rachel Maddow, Ed Schultz, everyone on the left, everyone on the right in the media, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity. Not a single person or anyone from their office, mind you, have responded. Yet all of these are multi-award-winning documentaries. They have been supported by the Veterans Administration, Veterans Organizations. And we have given out thousands and thousands of copies for free to the vets each year. Yet not a word is discussed anywhere in the media. Right now we have nearly a million veterans who are damaged, who are in need of help, and our Veterans Administration is not helping. So, something to think about. This is the latest from Sentient NeuroCare Services, and this was also brought up at the American Stroke Association's International Stroke Conference. I'll quote this. U.S. soldiers in combat often suffer constricted blood vessels and increased pressure in the brain, significant complications of traumatic brain injury. Quote, research shows that traumatic brain injury is a hallmark of recent military conflict, affecting nearly a third of all wounded soldiers. That's according to Dr. Alexander Rasmovsky, lead researcher and director of the Sentient NeuroCare Services. Now, just in lay language, when you constrict blood vessels in the brain, you end up with cerebral vasospasms. You end up with abnormally high pressure in the brain, and that is intracranial hypertension, and that can kill you. You can end up with multiple mini strokes or massive stroke. And a transcranial Doppler ultrasound is one way that's inexpensive and it's non-invasive. And it's portable. And that could be assessing these people in the field and getting them out of combat and getting them into treatment. So the better understanding how common these complications are among soldiers, they analyze the data from a whole bunch of these traumatic brain injured patients and found that they had all these closed head injuries. In fact, the anterior circulation vessels, the 66% of patients in the penetrating head injury and 13% in the close head injury group had transcranial Doppler signs of post-traumatic vasospasm. So what we're doing, we're allowing our vets to be injured and continue to be over there. That's a terrible mistake. Yet not a single thing is being done about it. Another thing that we should pay attention to, and for those who eat meat or poultry or fish, this is a study that should concern you. 80% of all antibiotics in the United States are used in big agriculture. The meat industry consumed record high antibiotics last year, according to the Pew Charitable Trust. So what happens when you have almost 30 million pounds of antibiotics sold in the United States put into meat and poultry? It ends up going through the animal and ends up in your body. And then you end up one day being resistant to one or more antibiotics that could save your life. So one more reason to go vegan and not have any animal products. And so that if you do need an antibiotic, there's a higher probability it's going to work. Now, some very upbeat information for those who want to boost their workout. Beet juice. That's the latest study that I have found out there. It was in the Journal of Applied Physiology, done at the University of Exeter. And what they found was that you get a longer workout with less effort and get the same benefits. And it's from juicing beets. And what they found was beet juice enables people to exercise up to 16% longer. And for those of us who are competitive athletes that do long-distance training, that's a big plus. So, see, what happens is when you're doing low-intensity exercise, you frequently find that you use less oxygen and effectively reducing the effort of the exercise. So the beet juice is allowing you that greater opportunity. It widens the blood vessels, it reduces blood pressure, and allows more blood flow. And at the same time, it reduces the amount of oxygen needed for muscles during activity. Then two effects combined have a significant impact on performing. Both low intensity, like power walking or biking, and high intensity physical tasks. So that's what I would suggest. Now, there's a superfood that nobody knew was a superfood. Kind of got left out along the way. It's tangerines. Tangerines, it turns out, is very good for the heart, according to this latest research. So if you ate more tangerines, which are in season now, it would protect you against heart attacks, diabetes, and stroke. Also, it helps prevent obesity. Why? Because of a pigment found in the tangerine is 10 times more potent than a similar one derived from grapefruit. It is called nobilitin, N-O-B-I-L-E-T-I-N. So a bowl of strawberries a day could help protect against throat cancer. That's another one. And it slowed precancerous growth in the esophagus. That was done at Ohio State University. Quote from Dr. Chen, strawberries may be an alternative or may work together with other chemopreventative drugs for the prevention of esophageal cancer. So two things that we should be doing, more organic strawberries, of course, and organic tangerines. So that's good. Also, I'm opposed to routine annual mammograms. I've written on it, I've done a lot of investigation on it, and the people who I respect for being objective in the field agree. Mammograms cause cancer in many individuals. Now, according to Sayer G. in Green Med Info, he did some research in this, and he says the following, I'll quote him, "Mammograms are in the news again. It doesn't look good for those who continue to advocate using them to detect cancer early in asymptomatic populations. The science increasingly runs directly counter to the screening guidelines produced by both government and non-governmental health aid organizations claiming to be advocates for women's health." Good. Remember just last November, the New England Journal of Medicine published a shocking analysis of the last 30 years of breast screening in the United States and found that 1.3 million women were overdiagnosed and overtreated for breast cancer, meaning they were misdiagnosed and mistreated. Well, this finding, released cunningly from scientific embargoed to the media on the eve of a holiday was so devastating in its implications that many either didn't understand its meaning or could not bear to accept the truth that the quarter of a century clarion call, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, get your annual mammogram or lose your life, caused more unnecessary suffering and pain and harm to women than it is possible to calculate. The only calculable dimension of this world historical failure is the billions of dollars that were made in the process of converting healthy, asymptomatic women into patients. And unfortunately, one of the last conversations Barbara Seaman, one of the great feminists in American history, and I had before she passed, was there has to be a whole new effort by the feminists in the United States, especially physicians and educators, for the new generation of young women who, needless to say, are better educated and conscientious, but they're going to follow the pink ribbon. They're going to go for the walks and the dances and the jogs and the bikes for, you know, the cure, and they're not going to look at it's all commercialism. And the mammogram is just one extension of that. And unfortunately, she was dying at the time, and she knew she was dying. And she hoped that this challenge would be picked up. Unfortunately, it has not been. So for the women in this audience, or the men who care about the women in your lives, you should make this a cause. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to be a PhD. All you have to do is look at all the independent literature on the dangers of mammograms. Read the book by Dr. Samuel Epstein on mammograms and others as well. And then start writing posts for women not to get, if they're asymptomatic, there's no reason in the world to get this mammogram because it will create cancer sooner or later. And for that, you have to read the work of one man who was more knowledgeable about the dangers of radiation than anyone else I've ever met in my life. And in fact, he was one of the co-founders of plutonium. And I had him on the show on many occasions, quoted him. He's in some of the documentaries, in fact. And I'm going to post an article from him today up on my website so that you can read about what he says, that any X-ray at any time in life will cause cancer at some point later in life. If you live long enough, the damage done from that X-ray will cause cancer. He is certainly the man who knew this. He published extensively on that. His writings were never refuted. In any case, back to the point, let's put out the information to look at the politics behind the whole cancer awareness efforts. They're about buying Kentucky Fried Chicken or Avon products, or a Ford car. They have all these pink, so they become a co-sponsor. So nobody looks at the results, they just look at the effort. Well, of course, everybody wants to prevent cancer. Even pharmaceutical companies whose products cause cancer, like pesticides, will then turn around and be a co-sponsor. And then they give you chemotherapy drugs that also cause cancer. And people are not looking at this. They're not stepping back and understanding how this works. So here's one example. Among women between the ages of 66 and 74 who already had health problems, 48% of those who had annual mammograms had at least one false positive reading during a 10-year period. And among women who are younger, it's much higher. So what happens when you get a false reading? You can end up having completely healthy breast tissue removed. And that's what you don't want. Because a lot of that isn't what it is. It's an abnormal breast finding, such as ductal carcinoma in situ, which would never have progressed to cause any harm. It does show, however, shows just how dangerous and inaccurate breast mammograms can be. So it's just something to think about. Now, here's one good piece of information, how we can lower the risk of breast cancer. Fruits and vegetables. This is from the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, and it was research done at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Young's Hospital. And they say in this study that A diet high, quote, in fruits and vegetables significantly lowers the risk of a wide variety of cancers, including breast cancer. The more carotenoids or pigments that give deep yellow, orange, and red colors to fruits and vegetables, lutein and lycopene, all of these carotenoids, they're good for you. So think about the people in the audience who are juicing every day. That's great for preventing breast cancer. Those who are taking their compounding powders, that's the best of all. And those who are eating a wide variety of organic fruits and vegetables, all that. Now that's where you have real proof, because the literature is there, over 1,000 studies. And our final study today is, this came from someone who asked me, Gary, I'm on a limited income right now, so I can't buy everything I'd like or maybe need. So could you list 5 superfoods that are not expensive that I could include on a daily basis in my diet that could help me stay well? And I said, sure. But I said, I'm going to mention it on the air just so other people who might be in a similar situation could take advantage. So let's just start with one of the least expensive foods, yet one of the most single nourishing superfoods, beans. Yeah, beans. Rich in protein and fibers and vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients, helping regulate your blood sugar level and insulin production. They sustain energy. They build up the immune system. They're rich sources of the omega-3 fatty acids. And it's easy to get them. So that's beans would be my first. Then something as simple as carrots. Now, carrots are rich, rich, rich in a form of vitamin A. They're known to improve vision. They aid in normal blood pressure. They're rich in nutrients that reduce the risk of eye disease. They can reduce the risk of postmenopausal breast cancer. And you can use them raw. You can steam them. They're very good for you. And something as simple as spinach. It's got folic acid. It helps alleviate constipation. It's an outstanding source of fiber. It protects against heart disease and prostate and breast cancers. It's highly anti-inflammatory. It's rich in vitamin K. It helps build strong bones. And so that's another source. And it's inexpensive. So carrots are inexpensive. Spinach inexpensive. Beans very inexpensive. And then I included two fruits. I would have to say that all around, cherries are packed with a tremendous amount of antioxidants, and they're a great source of fiber, and they have a low glycemic index, and they have phytonutrients that help build up the immune system. They have anti-cancer properties. They help your heart. And then kiwis. Kiwis are rich, rich, rich in vitamin C and potassium and fiber. In fact, most people are not aware of this. Kiwis have more fiber when compared to apples and bananas. They're very good for your heart. They help prevent cancer. They're good if you have respiratory conditions. They keep the blood thin, which helps prevent a stroke. They lower your bad LDL cholesterol. So they're rich in enzymes. So those are just 5 foods that are not expensive, packed with nutrition, and can help everybody. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Just a quick program announcement. This evening at the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock, I'll be having a topic, America's growing interest in Africa and the rise in U.S. military excursions and presence there. This is the most downloaded radio program in the United States, the Progressive Commentary Hour. Tonight, I'll have Glenn Ford, executive editor of Black Agenda Report, Richard Rossoff, head of StopNATO.org, and William Blum, historian and author about U.S. foreign policy. My guest here tomorrow will talk about globalization through the expansion of NATO and the need we have to start a new Cold War. So who are we going to start the war with? China? Russia? Iran? We need it. Got to have it. Can't live without it. And the average person will go right along with it. Why? Well, you'll have to listen in tomorrow. Then my next conversation will be with war historian Nick Turse, who's the editor of Tom Dispatch, on why we love systematic violence against other people and how we just can't get enough of it. And it's in our movies, it's on television, it's in our reality shows, it's the way people treat one another. Why? We'll talk about it. And then another topic later this week, why so many people sense our culture is suffering from a deeply spiritual disease, kind of like a collective psychosis. And worse is this type of thinking is fully operative in most of our governing institutions. Paul Levy, a trained pioneer in the postmodern psycho-spiritual, will speak about psycho-spiritual forces on that program. So 7 o'clock, Progressive Radio Network. Now, I take a little bit of time before I go to my public health issues, which I'm going to talk about now, on the FDA sale of a prescription drug that's going to get $25 billion in sales, and it's going on sale shortly. Then also from Dr. Bruce Levine, why the newest psychiatric diagnostic Bible will be great for Big Pharma and terrible for you. And then Being an American is Bad for Your Health by Marty Kaplan. Those are public health issues. But I have to take a little bit of time, just 3 minutes, to offer you a special. The savings today is $70. This is the Muscle Stuff Extra. This is for those people in this audience who want the finest protein supplement that I could possibly create. It took 3 years to do this. And it is from the best non-GMO organic brown rice and hemp and pea proteins. It contains a perfect balance of amino acids, vitamins, minerals, and superfoods like green tea and spirulina and maca root and acai berry and NADH and natural chocolate. I mean, just think of what's in the other products. Whey, yeast, eggs, soy, gluten. Not here. No. No, you got the organic cocoa and organic flax seed and lactobacillus acidophilus. You have the magnesium, potassium, biotin, vitamin C, resveratrol, blueberries, grape seed extract, raspberry seed extract, cranberry, prune, cherry, wild bilberry, strawberry extract, D-alpha tocopherol, lipase, amylase, protease, all digestive enzymes, cellulase, beta-carotene. You have all that. Chromium, vitamin B12, great for vegans. And you're getting 21 grams of high-quality protein. You're getting no sugars. That's what makes it really unique. So it's really good for people who have to be concerned about their blood sugar levels. So it's called Muscle Stuff Extra, and you're getting a $70 discount. I'm going to give you the number here in a second. You're going to call in, and you'll ask, and we only have it up here, I think, for 2 days, and then we'll get it to you. It'll go right out. So it's called Muscle Stuff Extra. Give a call right now, and let's get our number. I have two different numbers. I want to make sure that the last time they gave me the number, you call in for there. By the way, I want to thank all the people who are using the telephone to listen to the show. I think we passed 3 million minutes. We're number one in the world out of 4,000 people using it. Our number to call in to get this phenomenal special, to get a protein product you start your day with, and it really helps you with all the superfoods, is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now let's take a few minutes to talk about public health issues. First up, the latest in psychiatric meds. This is important. Why? Because more and more people are finding that just normal behavior, the normal emotions of life, of interacting with friends and family and oneself, are being pathologized. There's no science behind it. There's no legitimacy at it at all. In fact, in psychiatry, the way it's practiced today, it's completely a pseudoscientific cult, and yet they have enormous power, including the power to force you in certain circumstances to take your meds. This is a commentary from Bruce Levine. It's going to be posted on our website today. After the American Psychiatric Association approved the latest version of its diagnostic Bible, the DSM-5, psychiatrist Alan Francis, the former chair of the DSM-4 task force and currently professor emeritus at Duke, announced, quote, "This is the saddest moment in my 45-year career of practicing, studying, and teaching psychiatry." The DMS-5, which is the fifth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, will be released in about a month. Here's what Dr. Francis states. Mind you, he headed the task force on the DMS. Quote, "My best advice to clinicians, to the press, and to the general public, be skeptical and don't follow DMS-5 blindly down a road likely to lead to a massive overdiagnosis and harmful overmedication." For mental health professionals, this advice from the former chair of the DMS-4 task force is shocking. Almost as if Colin Powell were to advise U.S. Defense and State Department employees not to blindly follow all administration orders. Particularly upsetting for Francis is the DMS-5's pathologizing of normal human grief. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, in an editorial that he wrote, "Last Plea to DMS-5 Save Grief from the Drug Companies," Francis wrote, quote, "Making grief a mental disorder will be a bonanza for drug companies, but a disaster for grievers. The decision is also self-destructive for DMS-5 and further undermines the credibility of the American Psychiatric Association. Psychiatrists should not be misled." God is. "And mislabeling the normal." Now, in the DMS-4, which Francis helped create, there had been a so-called bereavement exclusion, which stated that grieving the loss of a loved one, even when accompanied by symptoms of depression, should not be considered the psychiatric disorder of depression. And prior to DMS-5, the American Psychiatric Association had acknowledged that to have symptoms of depression while grieving the loss of a loved one is normal and not a disease. But in just another month, normal human grieving accompanied by depression symptoms, which are almost universal, will be a mental disorder. Psychiatry's official diagnostic battle is over. Mental illness gatekeepers such as Francis, who are concerned about further undermining the credibility of the American Psychiatric Association, have lost, and mental illness expansionists, psychiatry's neocons, have won. The pathologizing of normal human grief is not the only DMS-5 embarrassment for Francis. In fact, in a blog, his blog, Francis' blog, he writes, quote, "DMS-5 is guide, not Bible. Ignore its 10 worst changes." So get ready to hear about a new mental illness diagnosis for kids: disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. That means, according to Francis, that this diagnostic Bible will turn temper tantrums into a mental disorder. the American Psychiatric Association, somewhat embarrassed by the huge increase in children diagnosed with pediatric bipolar disorder, by the way, which does not exist. Again, everything the American Psychiatric Association stands for is a fraud. So what you have is you bring minor neurocognitive disorder. That's a new one. The everyday forgetting characteristic of old age. So now if you forget something, you get brain disease. For Francis, this will result in huge numbers of misdiagnosed people. A huge false positive population of people who are not at special risk for dementia. He adds, quote, since there is no effective treatment for this condition or for dementia, the label provides absolutely no benefit while creating great anxiety, even for those at true risk of later developing dementia. It is a dead loss for many who will be misled and mislabeled. Binge eating disorder. That's new. Okay, and that's in the new thing, and that's a mental disorder. Well, what exactly constitutes binge or eating disorder? If you have more food than what your body requires with 12 times in 3 months, it's not just gluttony anymore. It is a psychiatric illness called binge eating disorder. Okay, I got a question for you. How many Americans today can say that within a three-month period they haven't overeaten? Let's just take the holiday season, Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah and Halloween and all the other festive occasions where people tend to eat more, and then they eat the leftovers. Or how many individuals are on limited money, so therefore they go in to eat and they eat all you can eat in places and diners for $9.95. And they're figuring, if I'm only going to be eating a meal every other day, I might as well eat as much as I can today to make up for what I can't eat tomorrow. This is pure insanity. But again, understand it's brilliant. They won. They're smarter than you. They played you. So when you overeat, it's a mental disorder. But if you overtake their drugs, you're a good patient. They control it. Is there any science behind it? There is no science. None. Not a scintilla of science. Francis's 10 worst changes in the diagnostic menu include first-time substance abusers who will be lumped in definitionally with hardcore addicts despite their very different treatment needs and prognosis and stigma. You use drugs once, suddenly you're in their disorder. They'll call it behavioral addictions. Quote, eventually behavioral addictions can spread to make a mental disorder of everything we like to do a lot. So if you like to do something, then you're going to be diagnosed with mental disorder. Additionally, Francis reports that the DSM-5 will likely trigger a fad of adult attention deficit disorder, leading to widespread misuse of stimulant drugs for performance enhancement and recreation, and contributing to the already large illegal secondary market in diverting prescription drugs. Let me just give you a brief history of this. The first DMS was published in 1952. It listed 106 disorders. And then it was the second was published in 1968, and now they had 182. Both the first and second included homosexuality as a mental illness. In the 1970s, coinciding with the heightened significance of the DMS, was the rise of gay activism. Thus, the elimination of homosexuality as a mental illness became the most visible psychiatric political issue. Gay activists staged protests at American Psychiatric Association conventions, and the APA was fiercely divided on this issue, but homosexuality as a psychopathology was ultimately abolished and then excluded from the DMS-3, published in 1980. And though homosexuality was dropped from the DMS-3, diagnostic categories were expanded in to 265, with several child disorders, including, if you argue with your parent, oppositional defiant disorder. And in Diagnostic Statistical Manual 4 was published in 1994 with 297 disorders and over 400 specific mental illness diagnoses. And then it expanded in 2005, and it just keeps getting longer and longer. So how exactly do certain human behaviors become a mental illness? It comes down to the opinion of a board of trustees of the American Psychiatric Association. This is what Davis writes, quote, "First and primarily, the NMS-IV is a book of dogma, though as theology, it is pretty pedestrian stuff. Is the DMS dogma as or establishment psychiatry would claim science? Two important aspects of a scientific instrument are validity and reliability. The Diagnostic Statistical Manual's scientific validity would mean that behaviors labeled as disorders and illnesses are in fact disorders and illnesses. And DMS reliability would mean that the clinicians trained in DMS criteria agree on a diagnosis. One historic example, a century before the first DMS, of a clearly invalid mental illness was dreptomania. Louisiana physician Samuel Cartwright was certain he had discovered a new mental disease. After studying runaway slaves who had been caught and returned to their owners, Cartwright concluded in a 1851 report in New Orleans Medical and Surgical Journal that these slaves suffered from dreptomania, a disease causing them to flee. And while virtually all psychiatrists today rightly mock the idea that fleeing slaves would be considered a valid mental disorder, get this, it was not until the late 1970s that cultural upheaval and political protests persuaded the American Psychiatric Association of the invalidity of homosexuality as a mental illness. And while homosexuality was dropped from the 1980 DMS-III, oppositional defiant disorder was added and is now popular with children and teenagers, anyone. Anyone who, quote, defies or refuses to comply with adult requests or rules, often argues with adults. Well, and that's how you have it. So my suggestion, don't trust anything in the DMS-5, or for that matter, from a psychiatrist pushing pills. I'm Gary Nall. Time for Talk Back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our number. Happy to have you on board now. And our final comment is from Marty Kaplan from Alternate. Being Americans, bad for your health. Here's what it says, quote, this is from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Americans are sicker and die younger than people in other wealthy nations. We spend more, but we die sooner. And it goes on to compare us with cancer, heart disease, stroke. Compares us with Britain, Canada, Australia, Japan, Scandinavian countries. Also, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Austria, Switzerland, the Netherlands, we're dead last in everything when it comes to our health. Why? I've got my ideas. I'd like to hear yours. Why being American is so bad for your health? Why, of all the industrialized nations, are we dead last, yet we spend twice as much or three times more than anyone else? 888-874-4888. We'll wait for your calls now for a moment. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I just got an email from someone who basically, he emails questions for you regularly. And here is someone who, when I asked him, you know, why is he asking all these questions about salt in olives when he, you know, where is the high blood pressure coming from? And he actually told me that it's much easier for him to cope with his depression through food. It's all about convenience, and it's all about not having to do things that are hard, because that's a common response. You know, Gary, we've been working with our health support groups. The people that don't do the actual, they don't create the positive changes, those are the ones that say, oh, but this is, it's so hard to give up the coffee. I mean, basically, it's going to be a lot easier for him to have a stroke or a heart attack and sit in the hospital where they can medicate him till he's numb. But this is that's my answer to the question. But I do have emails for you here. I have someone here who said,
let's go back for a moment.
Okay.
Because I'm faced with this all the time. I'll give a very comprehensive protocol. And at some point, you see a person's body language begin to become agitated or uncomfortable. And I ask, do you feel that you can handle this protocol? And most of the time they say it's just too much. I'm sorry, well, what part of it's too much? It's just too hard. Now, let's say I'm sitting across from a person that has got stage 4 cancer. And I say, how do you feel? Do you have local acidosis pain? Yes. And you have to take meds for it, and the meds you're taking are interfering with sleeping and digestion, and yes. How hard is death? How hard is surrendering your life? How hard is the pain that you're going through now? Nothing I've given you is hard. Nothing causes pain. It takes away pain. That's a conditioned response. It's hard. Because what's happened is so often we live a very monotheistic life. We do what we do, and we frequently do it well, and we like the foods we like, even if they're bad for us, and we like the beverages we like, even if they're bad for us, and we like living where we're living, even if it's toxic for us. I'm quite sure that if you had one of the most toxic areas of America, emitting a lot of radon gases and toxic chemicals, but if you gave the land cheap enough, you wouldn't have a single square inch left that wasn't occupied. So the idea is that we have an entire culture today. This is not a historical truism, but it certainly is today, and especially among the baby boomers and their children, the X generation and their children, the millennials, where we didn't want to make anything hard. We wanted everything to be easy. We wanted their efforts to be minimal. So as a result, the kind of interdisciplinary skills it takes to really thrive in life and the capability of making positive choices is not based upon an intellect. It's based upon reason. If I know that everything I do will have an outcome, either positive or negative, it's all cumulative, then why in the world would I continue to take chances and bring into my life something that's going to have a negative outcome? It's because in the moment, I'm not thinking about the future. I'm only thinking about now. Instant gratification. But I want my hamburger and french fries now. I want my porn now. I want my now. And so they get it now. And that lack of discipline and that defiance that anyone should have any say-so telling them no, even when saying no may be the best thing to save a person. Do you really need what you're going to buy? No, but I want to buy it. Makes me feel better. But you don't need it. You're not going to use it. And you're not going to like the fact that you're not going to be able to pay for it. I don't care. I want it now. So we have to understand that most of our problems in life are based upon this inability to stop and ask ourselves, what do I need for happiness? How can I maintain balance? And if it doesn't empower us, don't let it disempower you. Because it's either going to empower or disempower. There is no neutral. There is no such thing as a neutral choice. Everything will have an outcome sooner or later. We just never can anticipate when the later will be. And sometimes the later is sooner. We have more younger people today having heart attacks and strokes, having cancer, more on psychiatric meds. Now, why are all these people on psychiatric meds? Because they're advertised heavily, because they're peer pressure and their friends are all on them, because families grew up thinking it's normal to be over-medicated. That's part of it, yes. But also, what if you have not developed the character and strength to deal with life as it is? So you've been allowed to take a detour. If things get tough, go another direction. Disengage. And get into a nice space. This drug will put you in a nice space. And that's why we become such a drug-addled nation. So that's, I believe there's a lot to what you just said. I'm looking at the clock, and we want to take some calls. I'll come back to you in a second. Let's go to Bob in West Nyack, New York. Hi, Bob. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for you. So I've lost a couple of pounds over the past year, started to exercise. What can I do? Is there any kind of juicing thing that I should be doing to ensure that my arteries are, you know, getting cleaned out as well?
Yes. The best juice for everyone to lose weight is celery juice because it helps to decongest a lot of the buildup sodium in the body because it's rich in potassium, and it acts like a natural diuretic, and that also helps in thinning the blood. Celery juice thins the blood. By adding apple and cucumber in there, you get the benefit of getting rid of the excess water weight, properly rehydrating, getting your micronutrients, your trace elements, your electrolytes, all of which help. And over a period of time, by spiking it with vitamin C and quercetin, let's say 1,000, 1,500 milligrams per 16-ounce glass, and lemon, you're also naturally chelating out plaque from the arteries and rebuilding the epithelial tissue in your arteries. So that's the approach I would take.
Super. Thank you very much.
All the best. Ed from New Jersey. Ed, your turn.
Oh, good afternoon, Gary. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Listening to your show today, and so many issues, as always, are just so interesting and right on about our times. And it seems like today people are being medicated so much because maybe a few years ago people would just chalk it up to life experiences that we have to overcome. But nowadays there's so much available, like you're saying, to just pop this pill, take that. And it's really, you know, harming people where I do see people that are unhappy, are unhealthy. I think the foods we're eating, I think just the normal negativity in the mainstream media with the politicians, you know, people just don't know what to do anymore. You don't know whether you're going to have a job, so you're working a job that you're possibly not really fond of, but you're afraid to lose it because of maybe not getting another one. So even if you are employed, people just aren't feeling a sense of fulfillment, and the environment isn't what it was years ago. It doesn't appear as healthy, which I think is just all these different factors are just bringing everybody to a level that it's just an overall unhappy country. And I'd like to know what is going right with the majority of the people out here to where they are feeling, you know, personal fulfillment or just any sense of a future that's going to provide anything positive. So I just think all the factors everywhere are what's causing the country to be very unhealthy. I see it all over.
That's very good insight there. It was Thomas Paine, one of the founders of our republic, who said, "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it." Today, what we do not have is people willing to undergo the fatigue, meaning effort, of supporting what is right and true, whether it's a choice about their health, I will say no to what is unhealthy to me, of turning off a bad television program or not going to a bad movie. Instead, every day, planning their day, what they can do by the choices they make, by their labor, both physical and intellectual and spiritual labor, to connect with that which is essential to their development and their capacity to help make it a better world. That takes effort. That takes discipline. That takes stop distraction. That takes exclusion of that which interferes in the guidance we need to be on the right side of right. Instead, we take the lowest common denominator. We keep lowering the bar. We lower the bar to have the worst of human beings become the most powerful over us, politicians. We end up believing in media that is completely biased. It's willing to sell our children junk foods that can only lead to death, diabetes, destruction of their immune systems, stunting of their growth, and yet we still trust them. We have bloviators like Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh, who, though on occasion they speak the truth and they certainly have large and loyal audiences, they are disconnected from reason, and all they do is react, both through their egos, their need to be right, and their sense of entitlement that everyone should pay attention to because of their power. O'Reilly consistently boasts about, you know, the wealth he has and that he is the most powerful person. Compared to what? You know, compared to what? One happy person living in harmony who actually has a happy and unchallenged relationship is light years ahead of Bill O'Reilly. Bill, what's happened to your relationship? Huh? Have anything to do with you betraying your wife? Let's see. So what you have is you have a mockery of ethics. You have doctors telling us about health when all they do is contribute to illness except for emergency procedures. We have psychiatrists who are clueless about the human condition but believe that a pharmacological approach is all that's needed to take us, what, to a healthier place? No, to a place where we do not react, in effect, lobotomizing. So, and a kid speaks out in class, do we encourage the child to challenge the teacher, the course, how it's taught? No. That's an unruly child, and we'll give them a diagnosis and a drug. When the kid commits suicide, we'll say, bad parenting. We look at our food supply, and instead of encouraging healthier foods and organic, locally grown and MGO, we do just the opposite. And then we wonder why. We're a nation of gluttons. We ask people to sublimate their problems but never confront them. If you're willing to confront a problem, you have to have the hard choice. When you're willing to deny the problem, then you'll sublimate. So gambling, alcohol, marijuana, tranquilizers, compulsive work, gossip, that is no substitute for an authentic life. But it's what is highly conditioned in the United States, and it's ubiquitous. We are so removed from the truth that when someone does tell us the truth, we don't believe them because it's not officially sanctioned. So Thomas Paine was right. We must learn to put our efforts on what is right, even if it makes us feel uncomfortable. Appreciate your call. Thanks, Ed from New Jersey. We're out
thank
of time.
You.
I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we'll be talking about Obama's post-racial economy.
Yes,
expecting that he would be talking about this tomorrow in his State of the Union address, except he wouldn't call it that. He would call it instead some solutions for the middle class, whatever that is.
You realize that one of the biggest mistakes we make in the United States as a whole, not individuals, is women will say that we need a woman president, and Hillary Clinton would be their ideal pick. Her approval ratings now are 76% against Obama's 40-some percent. So she will be the next president, but they will refuse to look at anything that she has done as Secretary of State, when she was with the White House, when she was senator. But she will be a woman, and she will be just as disappointing for women as Barack Obama was for the majority of blacks. Now, why don't you discuss what it means when we get into believing that someone who represents our race, our creed, our ethnicity, our income will do better for us than someone who just simply wanted to do the right job for everyone? And why we just can't get it right?
That's where we're going today.
Good. We look forward to hearing it.
Thank you.
Utrice Lead coming at you right now on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a nice day, everyone.